Scott.
This is Pat.
Well, it's your lucky day today. We got a great program for you. We're going to first spend some time talking about this growing trend of passive investing, index funds, and what that means for your retirement.
We're next going to talk to Dr. Bill Thomas, and he has got an interesting story about aging with dignity, grace, and creativity.
Going to take a great call. Plus, we're going to talk to one of our advisors for Advisor Story. So you want to stick around for Hanson McLean.
And now, Barron's ranked top 100 independent advisors. It's time for Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you're here with us. Whether you're listening to us on terrestrial radio, either from Newstalk 1530 KPK out of Sacramento, or KGO out of the Bay Area, or KOA out of the Denver metro area, or you're listening anytime with you on your mobile device, listening to a podcast of this program, or on a computer for that matter, listen to the podcast. You could actually be perhaps watching this on video podcast. And if you're doing that, watching the video podcast, welcome. We're glad you are joining us. And we have to remember to look at the camera periodically.
Right. Yes.
I'm not used to 21 years of doing a radio program.
You could see in the camera, I've been, I joined a new gym. I went to this place called InstaPhysique. Truly.
It's not called InstaPhysique.
It's called InstaPhysique.
It is not.
It is called InstaPhysique. It's a 40-minute workout.
That's not instant. Like 7-minute abs. But anyway, continue.
It's like a Pilates kind of deal where you use these cables and things. So I go there because a friend recommends it. I don't know what I was thinking because she's a 55-year-old lady, a friend of the family. She's telling me how awesome it is. So I go there.
What's a 55-year-old lady have to do a thing about whether you're going to go to Insta Gym?
It's an Insta Physique. I'm working out and I'm the only guy in the room. It's filled with all these like
curves, like Pat said, curves,
like these 30-year-old women. And the lady's going, well, this will really sculpt and shape your butt. That's what she's saying as I'm doing this workout. But
I noticed you were quite shapely, Pat.
It's Insta Physique.
Anyway,
and
this is a financial program.
I am so stinking sore. My butt
I think we
hurts.
Talked about
Insta Physique.
I think we talked about
middle-aged
body last week on the program, and this week we're talking about your body. No more Pat McLean body on the program.
Did we talk about my body?
Yes. First you start to use bobblehead, you're going to have life-size
bobbleheads. I'm feeling pretty good about myself since I joined a gym.
Did it give you like bigger cheekbones, like masculine ones?
Yeah.
Bigger? Are they supposed to be bigger or higher? What are they?
I don't know what it's supposed to be. All I know is that I didn't think it was such a great idea to sign up for a month long with this bunch of, but I got to do it because I got to get my money's worth out of it. I'll be a different man.
You got to do it. Anyway, we've got a great program. If you'd like to join us, you got a question for us, both myself and my co-host here, by the way. We're financial advisors. We're not good at a lot of things, but we're pretty good at that piece of the world. So if you'd like to join us, have a question regarding perhaps your retirement, maybe you're trying to save money for something else, you're trying to figure, does it make sense to do a refinance on a rental property? Well, it doesn't really matter the financial question. We'd love to help you out. So to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, simply call 1-888-2-HANSON. Again, that's 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON, and it'll get you on the program. Or you can go to moneymatters.com, and I think there's a place to click to get you on here. So we have seen a big shift over the last number of years.
Massive.
From a active investment to passive investment.
And what's the difference between an active investment and a passive investment, Scott?
Well, an active investment is where either an individual or a portfolio manager spends time doing research, trying to pick the best sort of security. Let's talk about stocks for a minute. Pick the best stocks for the portfolio, and they'll say, no, let's buy this one, let's not buy that one, etc. And then they monitor these stocks on a daily basis and make transactions in them.
So they're actively managing the portfolio. That's where the word active comes from.
And for example, when I began in the industry in 1990, It was right after Peter Lynch had ran
Fidelity Magellan
for many years, and it was a phenomenal fund during the 80s. He had incredible returns. It was a different era, for sure.
It started as a small cap fund, and as it got larger, it became a large cap fund. So the opportunities changed significantly, and the fund changed. But that was kind of the heyday of the actively managed funds. And so when you looked at mutual funds, you remember in the you may not remember, in the tech boom, Janus funds were all the rage. And Janus were actively managed mutual funds that were primarily, at that point in time, tech sector.
And so we've been seeing an increase of people saying, you know, instead of trying to outsmart the market, why don't I just buy the market? I look historically, for example, the stock market has gone up a lot more than it goes down. Let me just buy the broad basket of the market. Let's just buy everything out there and just hold it, knowing that some of these companies are going to do phenomenally well and some are going to go out of business.
And so that is passive investing, or sometimes called index investing.
Index investing. And so, in fact, I remember, Pat, I used to own a fund and I actually kept ownership of it because I enjoyed their annual report. I didn't have a lot in it. It was a small cap fund. But the annual report, and I give the company credit for doing it. Actually, I'm not, because I don't remember the company. Otherwise, I would give it. They would list in there their top five stock picks, and they're all phenomenal returns, up eightfold, etc. Then their bottom five stock picks, bankrupt, down 98%, whatever, right?
Yes.
And I liked it because I thought, you know, the same amount of research and due diligence went into picking the five that did phenomenally well as the ones that went bankrupt.
And probably the same person was making the decisions.
Probably.
Or the same team of people.
But here's,
so we get this question often. Which is better, active investing or passive? Do you use index funds or do you use actively managed funds? We get it all the time.
And
our answer is yes.
But if you look over the last 10 years, the percentage of times that the passive funds have beat the managed funds, it ranged anywhere from 71% to 93%. So all those other, actually, matter of fact, the last 10 years, the only year where the active management looked somewhat decent was in the financial crisis. And I think that's primarily because they had cash.
Most yes.
had some portion of the cash that wasn't invested.
But there are parts of your portfolio that you want passively managed, use index. And there are parts of the portfolio that you may want actively managed, which is around the fringes. If you've got high yield bond in your portfolio, if you've got emerging markets, if you've got international, you may want to use a portion of either passive or active. So when people ask us what is better, indexing or not indexing, the answer is yes. There are points in time where one may make a little bit more sense than the other. Always pay attention to fees. The internal cost of the mutual fund should be an importance to everyone.
And no question about
passive it. Passive management or indexing historically has been lower cost than active management.
Well, yes, much lower. And these ETFs, for the vast majority of ETFs are passive investments, index funds. And the one, there's been a one danger, though. The S&P 500, the Spiders Index, which originally created thinking there's going to be long-term investors, what ended up happening is that people trade, that's the most actively traded security on a typical day on the stock exchange.
Which means people are buying and selling it all the time.
Trying to make bets on it is what's happening. We're seeing people, which is going to be a danger. So anyway, index funds, they are going to continue to grow. Sometimes people say, are there too much in indexes today? No, there's a long way to grow with indexing, and I think it makes sense as a piece in most people's portfolios. So there it is with the index fund. So anyway, we're going to transition now. We want to talk about the new view of retirement. So on previous shows, we've talked a lot about finding purpose and meaning in retirement through work, mainly because, well, you look at the right now, roughly 7 out of 10 baby boomers say they want to do some sort of work during retirement. But this week, we're going to talk about the power of relationships in retirement and how do you find purpose and meaning through relationships. And we've got an authority on this topic, Dr. Bill Thomas. Dr. Bill Thomas works with Life Reimagined, he's done a number of things. He's Wall Street Journal's named him as one of America's top 10 innovators. So, Dr. Bill Thomas, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Well, I'm glad to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. So, first of all, tell us a little bit about what you do with Life Reimagined.
Well, you know, basically, I'm a physician, and as such, I really have an interest in life transitions. You know, how people move from sort of one stage of life to another. It's really an important issue and importantly impacts people's health. So I've spent a few years with the crew at AARP thinking about life transitions and trying to create some tools and possibilities that help people move from one phase to the next.
You know, it's interesting, Dr. Thomas, because we've worked with people over two decades as they transition from work to retirement. And I've got to admit, in the early days, we focused almost exclusively on the finances. And then I think as long that we've been doing it and we start seeing the issues that people go through, we spend a considerable amount of time with people now talking to them about, if you're going into retirement, what's your life going to look like, and help them have some sort of plan for the retirement. Mm-hmm. How well do you think, as people move out of their traditional career, how well prepared are most people?
Well, actually, I think you set it up perfectly by saying kind of this is, relationships matter. And one of the big things that happens as people shift from full-time paid employment to what we often refer to as retirement is that their network of relationships change. And you notice I say just change, not get better, not get worse, just different. And honestly, in my practice, I've seen some people do that really well, like your investor. You know, some people are really great investors. Some people don't manage the change in relationships as well. And I think, you know, Life Reimagined is about helping people out, just like you do with helping people think more clearly about money.
Yeah, and part of that relationship change is they lose part of their identity when they leave a formal work. And oftentimes a status.
So I think you're right. Identity, status, and also friendships. You know, there's people, you know, you're coming to work every day, you're creating this program, and, you know, if you were to leave your position there, you'd also be missing a lot of the people you're close to. And that's certainly true for people who retire. So I spend a lot of time helping people think about what's next. Think about kind of where their new normal is going to be and where they're going to find the new relationships that are going to propel them into kind of a new journey of meaning and purpose.
And how do you go about doing that to help people figure this out?
Well, one of the themes I like to emphasize to people is that aging is a team sport. And if you want to do it well, you have to be connected to other people. So some of the things we've done are created an online platform called LifeReimagined.org. If you go there, you're just going to find some great coaching tips, some great ways, videos, great ways of thinking, good articles, great ways of really asking yourself some of the questions that need to be asked. I'm a big believer in people not retiring, but reimagining. You know, instead of saying, well, that's it, I'm done with my work phase, how about, you know, in essence saying, I'm on to my next great adventure.
You know, it's interesting. I had last week or so, I was reading an article in the Wall Street Journal of a columnist that he'd retired. He lasted 5 months in retirement, and he used the column to talk about his experience of retirement. He got all the travel done, and it, I think after a while, it's like, and do you see that sort of thing often at this stage?
Oh, my goodness, yes. You actually just put your finger on an important concept, which is a phase of retirement called exuberant disengagement. So you've got somebody who's been writing columns, you know, for 20 years, and they retire, and the first thing they say is, wow, I'm free. I've got all this time. I can do what I want. And they're excited about it. And then what happens is, to many people, they start asking deeper questions, like, you know, what's the purpose of my life here? You know, what am I really trying to accomplish? And actually, a significant number of people do return to employment after the exuberant disengagement phase. And that's perfectly normal, perfectly appropriate.
And how long? So listen, I go to Hawaii with my family and I'm going to be there for 10 days. Mm-hmm. And the first 2 days, I'm thinking I could do this forever. And day number four, I'm actually out looking at businesses, or I'm climbing the walls, or I'm driving my family crazy. And I don't know why they don't want a vacation with me anymore. But how long does this normally, I know mine lasts about 2 days. How long does this normally last?
Well, that typically people would talk about this phase in terms of 6 months to 18 months. And it's a wonderful time. That exuberant disengagement phase, if you're going to really make the most of it, explore. Kind of like what you were talking about, you know, get out there and explore the world. You know, you've been doing full-time and paid employment. Here's your chance to look at some really new ideas. Life Reimagined, you know, this concept, if you Google it or you go to lifereimagined.org, you're going to see some great opportunities for you to explore and really find what's next for you.
Dr. Thomas, I have a philosophical question that I've been discussing with some friends of mine, which is the government gives people an economic incentive to leave the workforce between the ages of 62 and 70. Through Social Security, with this old-fashioned concept of retirement that doesn't, I think, doesn't apply in a post-industrial society anymore. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that there's a range of things happening. You know, in my particular case, I grew up in a family of bricklayers, and I actually would have been a bricklayer if I hadn't wound up going to medical school, but...
But, you can't lay bricks forever.
No, my uncles were really ready to retire. That's really very hard physical work. Now, I'm not at all interested in classical retirement. You know, I'm not doing heavy physical work, and I would love to remain employed well after 70, you know, if that's possible for me. So I think the problem that you're highlighting is we have a one-size-fits-all system. And I think we'd all be a lot better off if the architecture of retirement finance was a little more customizable and more adaptable to different people's needs.
See, I appreciate that.
That's
and this
brilliant.
Is Dr. Bill Thomas of Life Reimagined here at Hanson McLean's Money Matters. So one of the things that you talked about, this exuberant disengagement, okay? And we've certainly worked with a lot of people that have planned their retirement and they counted it down. Now they're retirement, they're happy. Mm-hmm. But there's also, studies showed it's almost one out of two retire earlier than they'd planned because of some outside force. They lose a job, downsize, company moves, they have a health issue, loved one that has a health issue. In that sort of situation, how common is it for someone to still have this exuberant disengagement period, or how often is it of a depression?
Actually, great point. So we've been discussing voluntary retirement, you know.
Yes.
When it's like it's the difference between going to the doctor for a scheduled checkup and winding up in the ER.
Yeah.
You know, those are two different experiences. And for people whose, like you said, health, an accident, a change of, you know, loss of an employer, those people are very often very distressed because a lot of things they were counting on in terms of continued income and so on, they're now off the table, and they have a lot of stress around housing, healthcare, income insecurity. It's really very difficult, and there is a high degree of depression associated with that.
And what are some things someone in that situation can do? Because one out of two, roughly, is kind of some sort of involuntary retirement. What are some practical things that a person like that can do to make sure that they still have purpose and meaningful relationships?
Well, you know, actually, that's it. The really most important thing during that phase is to really cultivate your social network. you know, family, friends, acquaintances, stay plugged in, because your opportunity to return to some kind of gainful employment is going to be, you know, heavily contingent on your social network. So, you know, naturally, some people withdraw, some people kind of pull away because of depression or because of a loss of prestige or standing. And my advice to people in these cases is get out there and be with people. Explore, question. I've had, just you brought it up, but I've had patients of mine who have gone through that difficult, unexpected retirement and actually wound up in an entirely different field, loving their new work. And
what a blessing.
Looking back at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. A kind of a blessing in disguise in retrospect, yeah.
Well, you know, so last week we had someone who helps mainly people in their mid-50s figure out how to be self-employed. Mm-hmm. Right? It was a specialist, and that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But right. We also, yeah, great. But what we end up doing here at Hanson McLean, I can't tell you how often we end up meet with somebody. Maybe they're mid-50s. They've been at the same job for 20, 25 years.
Mm.
They're counting down the years. I have 7 years, right?
And they're miserable.
And we're always kind of like, is there another way to look at this? Maybe you do something different, even for lesser pay, and postpone retirement. Do you guys see that a lot with your work at Life Reimagined?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. We do. And I'll actually give you the kind of the key question to ask yourself. Ask yourself, if you think your next 5 years are going to be pretty much the same as the last 5 years, you need to think about changing your life. So it's a wonderful test. Because that is a kind of, that's a way of being stuck. So it doesn't mean you have to change your career or your job. It means if you're looking at a static environment that crosses a decade, you're missing opportunities. Look at your investment advice. You know, I believe that you guys would counsel a very watchful approach. Avoiding kind of a forget it, never think about it.
Yeah, correct. Watch it constantly and ask.
Yeah.
Avoid debt.
I heard you on the second, you did a segment before. I was really enjoying listening on before I came on. So it's the same thing with your life. Your life is an asset. That life energy, those years, mid-50s, 60s, wherever you are, that's an asset. And Life Reimagined, I think part of what it does is it helps you manage that asset more effectively. So you guys are the pros around one part of the equation. I think Life Reimagined brings another part of the equation. Active, thoughtful, evidence-based management of your life energy.
Evidence-based. What'd you say? Active, thoughtful, evidence-based.
Thoughtful, evidence-based. Management of your life energy.
That's great. It's not a dress rehearsal. You do not want to squander these years, right?
I can assure you.
You certainly don't want to squander the years between 50 and 60 in a job that feels like a prison sentence. When all it takes to get off of that is to reimagine.
Find some tools and resources like what they're doing at Life Reimagined.
It is not a dress rehearsal.
Well, no, my goodness.
Dr. Thomas, we certainly appreciate you joining us today and sharing some of your wisdom and insights.
Yeah, you guys are awesome.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for sharing the time.
Pat thinks he's awesome, so that's good.
Finally can find someone I agree with.
And if you want more information on the work that Dr. Bill Thomas has been doing with Life Reimagined, you can go to our website and at moneymatters.com, and there'll be a link to him and the stuff that he's doing there.
You know, Scott, we just started this segment, 5-6 weeks ago, where we're interviewing these experts on just, they have different views of retirement than traditional. I enjoy them. I really, because I'm 53 and it makes me think about, and we all think from our own lens. We all view life through our own lens.
The average retiree under age 75, spends 4 hours a day in front of the television.
So the average spends 28 hours
average,
a week.
4 hours per day watching television. That doesn't mean it's on the background.
It's they're sitting there actively watching.
Watching
it.
Television. I don't think that's what most people's... I don't think when someone says, how do I want to invest my week next week? I think I'd like to spend 4 hours a day in front of the television.
So my,
I think life just happens to them, which is one of the challenges, I think, at retirement.
Which is what he said.
Which is what Dr.
Thomas said, which is... And the exuberant disengagement was interesting. So you'll find his link on moneymatters.com, a link to Dr.
Yeah,
Bill
and
Thomas.
You can see that right there. So... And we're going to take a quick break. If you'd like to join the program with a question for us, we'd love to take your call regarding something financial or your retirement or something like that. To join the program, it's 1-888-2-HANSON. Again, that's 1-888-2-HANSON. We'd love to take your call. But stick around for more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Two guys, two brains, and one head of hair.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Before we head back into this, just let people know, Social Security, if you are retired, 0.3% cost of living adjustment in 2017. 0.3.
Which,
so it's roughly a $4 increase for most people.
That's the good news. The bad news.
But you're not going to see it because the Medicare Part B premiums are going up. So you're not getting much. But if you're still working and you're at a higher wage.
Good for you.
But bad news here, because although there's a 0.3% increase in benefits, the tax, the wage base for Social Security, this is the maximum amount of your wages that get taxed. It was $118,500 for 2016. A 7.3% jump next year for 2017, it goes to $127,200.
So that's 6.2% of your income, and your employer matches that as well. So that is not only an increase of cost to you, but to your employer as well. And remember, on the Medicare side, there's an unlimited cap on that, which means there's no cap at all. And that's 1.45% of wages.
Yeah. So this increase is roughly $539. If you're making more than that, it's an extra $539 more a year in tax, Social Security tax that you're paying, plus your employer's paying the same amount.
It's $1,000.
Social Security, and by the way, if you got questions on that, 1-888-2-HANSON to join it. Social Security is weighted highly skewed towards the lower wage employees. So if let's say somebody retires and they were making $10,000 a year, Social Security is going to make up more than 80% of their income at normal retirement.
But if that same person retires at $100,000 a year,
it's going to be less than 40% replacement. Although they paid in 10 times as much in tax.
But it's not designed for that. It is a social welfare program.
Yeah, that's how it works. So. Anyway, that's Social Security, and we're going to take a call on Social Security, 1-888-2-HANSON to join us. We are in Northern California talking to Lisa. Lisa, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. Yeah, I know you were just talking about Social Security. And so my question is, I've read your book, Personal Decision Points, which I enjoy very much.
Thank you.
Very informative. It's very informative. Anyway, in the beginning of the book, and kind of, you were kind of just talking about it, it sounds like, and I've heard on your show before that you kind of say for people with substantial savings, maybe should go ahead and start taking Social Security early because it is less likely that they're going to get it. And that Social Security will probably change over the next 20 years.
So my
and the means testing you talked about.
Well, yeah. So here's kind of. Like nobody, we can't predict the future, right? We don't know what the future is going to be. But in financial planning, we like to look at probabilities of outcomes. What are statistical probabilities?
And previous events that would lead us to believe that this is going to happen.
So whether it's looking at someone's portfolio, all right, we invest everything in Google, what's the statistical probability that we're going to have a decline in a so whatever it is, we look at statistical probabilities and then look at from a risk-based approach, what's how can we reduce the risk as much as possible? So when we look at Social Security, it's essentially a promise from the government, Congress, of some future income for retirement that we've paid into a system. What we know is a couple things. One is Social Security is not sustainable in its current form. There's tons of studies out there. It's going to become insolvent. Doesn't matter what there's different years depending on different assumptions. But we all know that it's not sustainable in its current form for a variety of reasons. So we know something has to change. We also know that when Social Security first came out, benefits were completely tax-free. Then Congress decided, well, wait a minute, in the 80s, so why don't we tax half the benefits because, you know, employers kick in half and employers get a tax deduction. So it's only fair that we tax half. So they began taxing half of benefits, but only for retirees that had income above a certain limit.
$32,000 for a family.
Yes. A provisional income. So it didn't even count all Social Security. Then during Bill Clinton's first term, they increased that tax amount to 85%.
And incomes over $44,000.
So now, with what happened here, you'd already paid taxes. Now they're taking it back from you. So it was essentially a way to means test. How do we reduce benefits
for those people that don't really need it?
That's what we started. Already has happened.
And that's where this idea came from, which is if you don't really need it and you're not
payroll,
then you probably should take it. Because who do they tax? Who do you, if the government's trying to raise more capital, who do they tax, Lisa?
The rich people.
People with money. It'd be silly to tax.
Well, California, they got a proposition for the tax people over $1 million. Let's keep taxing another 3% off those people. We've got candidate Hillary Clinton. Her whole platform is taxing the wealthy.
So anyway,
whatever wealthy means, right?
So for those that haven't read Scott's book, where this so Lisa read the book. And by the way, if you want the book, you go to our website, moneymatters.com /book, and there's a 75% discount code. There
what,
you go.
What is your situation, Lisa?
Okay. So I'd like to know what you would recommend for my husband and I. Okay, my husband is 63 and is still working. He makes about $340,000 a year, and he may cut back to half-time next year. I'm 65 and I'm not working, but I do have some self-employment income from some farming operations with my family. And it varies significantly from year to year.
And
$20,000, I think.
How much?
Give us a range.
We can range from nothing to $100,000. So I figure like $20,000 a year.
Okay. And why are you taking it as self-employment income?
Well, I was looking at my tax return because some of it is considered because I have some farming income from when my grandparents were living, their farming operation. And then there's some that I do with my siblings. Anyway, my sister's a CPA, so she's the one that determines whether or not it's what part of my farming operation is self-employed.
Do you work in the farm?
Yeah, I help with the book.
Got it.
Okay.
Let's say it's 5 years from now. Where's the income? It's the farming income's going to continue. What about your husband?
Well, like I say, he's thinking about cutting back to halftime next year. And then, you know, he'll probably keep working for a couple more years. Conceivably, he could retire in 2 or 3, but.
And do you have much in the way of savings to replace that income?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We have, we also have some other sources of income. We have rentals that we get probably about $22,000.
All right. So
a year from,
if you are my older sister, I would say, look, your situation is such that you're going to have a nice income the rest of your life. Looks like much more than the average retiree. Right.
Right.
So if you were my sister, I would recommend, if you're at your normal retirement age, 66, I'd recommend applying for Social Security.
For you.
And when your husband reached 66, buy the same thing.
If for him as well.
And there might be some other listeners saying, that's crazy. If you Why don't you wait until they're both fully retired? I just think you guys would be easy targets. You got $100,000 a year of mostly passive income from a farm income. I mean, it wasn't that many years ago when I was in this business. There used to be an excise tax on retirement plan contributions greater than $750,000. It was a 15% excise tax. Now, $750,000, some people might say, well, that's really not that much. Maybe it was more 20 years ago, granted, but still. So you can run the numbers to state while it would make sense to wait till age 70, but that assumes that the benefits aren't going to change at all. And it also assumes that the tax law benefits aren't going to change.
You answer the question. Uh-huh. If it were you and you were in this situation, So you want to take it as soon as you can under normal retirement age, which is a 66 for you. And then your husband wants to take it at his normal retirement age, assuming he
66,
unless he quits working completely prior to then, in which case he may want to take it earlier.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That sounds
reasonable. And you're just betting. This is what your bet is. And you don't have to bet with us because the numbers would say defer until age 70. But I'm betting sometime between now and the age of 80, they're going to come back to you and say, that Lisa and her husband, they've done okay for themselves. They could live on a lot less. Let's take some from them. And you've seen people like Chris Christie, right?
He recommended it.
He recommended it. And he stands behind Donald Trump everywhere. I mean, you can't get much more Republican. Although I don't think Donald Trump is actually Republican, but you couldn't get much more Republican than a Chris Christie. And he is the one that said incomes over $100,000 should probably be means tested. So you've got it from both sides of the aisle. Something, they're going to have to do something.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Lisa, you've done really well for yourself. Congratulations. You're going to have to start paying your fair share.
Yes, it's about time.
Well, that's kind of what I thought you guys would say, but I thought I'd call in and just run it by you and see what you'd say.
Well, we appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Lisa.
Have a great day.
Good luck to you. And I think any government benefit or tax structure for that matter, even the Roth IRA. Yes, Roth IRA, it's a promise of tax-free income tomorrow. Are there other taxes that could be imposed? I mean, we saw the Obamacare tax on higher income people.
Which includes distributions from IRAs.
It does not include distributions from IRAs, but it could in the future.
But in the state of California, there's taxes that don't have anything to do with where the source of the income is.
That is correct. And maybe there's a flat tax in the future.
Maybe there's a consumption tax. A larger consumption tax.
So I think it's just always important to look at a variety of those things. Patton, you wanted to chat about...
Merrill Lynch. I wanted to talk a little bit about Merrill Lynch and how Merrill Lynch is... So you've heard us talk about this on this show, about this Department of Labor rule that no longer allows commissions on IRA accounts. When does it start, Scott? April of next year?
April next year. Although Trump says he'll have it repealed.
Of course he will. So,
and he's going to make America great.
And he may. But this isn't a political show. So this idea that you can no longer charge commissions on a brokerage account, I think is an IRA, is great for the investing public. I think it is great for the investing public.
Well, last week's program, we had an example of an 84-year-old woman whose account was being churned.
Yes.
Churned.
By their broker.
Yes.
At a fairly large firm.
And so what we've seen happen is the Department of Labor stepped in and said, you know, Wall Street, you guys don't seem to be really paying much attention to this because you're not putting the client's interest first. You just have a suitability requirement. You're not actually taking a fiduciary. So the Department of Labor sidesteps the Securities and Exchange Commission and say, well, if you're not going to do what we think is the right thing, we will. So they went and said, you know, IRAs are retirement account assets. We're the Department of Labor. We have jurisdiction over this. So we are going to impose the rules that state that you any sort of investment advice must be in the client's best interest. Not just will work for them, right? When you go to buy a car, you assume that the car salesman is not, they're trying to sell you whatever car they can at the highest price, right?
That's the assumption.
That's what, of course, that's what you would think. They're business.
But when you go to your doctor, you don't assume he's trying to sell you unless you go to maybe a plastic surgeon, and I don't know. You might
obviously.
Say, yeah, obviously, I don't know how a plastic surgeon works. If you've been on our website, you'll
I actually
know
had a plastic surgeon try and sell me once.
On what?
I had a couple. I had a mole removed in my face. I went to plastic surgeon, so I didn't look like Scarface. And I was asking him about how he got into plastic surgery. He was a specialist in something else. And he basically said it was for the money. And then he starts asking me about my wife and the augmentation. And I'm thinking, this guy's
really?
Pitching me. And it was a lovely Christmas gift for my wife.
So
I'm kidding. I'm joking.
Wrong.
Joking.
That is so wrong.
That was a bad joke.
Okay.
You brought plastic surgery and I took it down
no,
the wrong
so you,
path.
You, but you wouldn't expect that your doctor would be trying to sell you
That's
the
correct.
Most expensive surgery. You wouldn't expect that your investment advisor would try to sell you a product that pays the biggest commission that is not in your best interest. So the Department of Labor comes in and says,
but
look,
that's what had been happening.
You can no longer use commissions inside of IRAs. You can charge a fee, but you have to put the client's interest first. So this has been big, big thing in our industry. And these large, what they call them wirehouse firms, but they're the old line firms, the Merrill Lynch's, the Morgan Stanley's of the world, have come out and said, hey, we're no longer going to charge commissions in our IRAs come next April. I think this is great for the investing public. I think that the investing public will be well served by this.
Well, there's just a movement towards this. Actually, United Kingdom, they took a stance a number of years ago on all investments, all had to put clients' interest first. We use what's called a fiduciary standard. Of course, independent firms like Hanson McLean, we've operated under the fiduciary rule for years because we are fiduciaries, but... yeah, I think this is it's a step in the right direction. Not too excited it's the Department of Labor, but here we're seeing a large firm like Merrill Lynch, you know, the 800-pound gorilla.
They call it the Thundering Herd.
They do?
Yeah.
The Thundering Herd. Anyway, so there you have it. Anyway, I think it's a step in the right direction. We're going to turn now and talk real advice. This segment of our program, we talk with a real advisor at Hanson McLean. It talks about a real life experience they had working with an individual or a couple and what the issue was and what kind of advice they gave and what the outcome was. And you are to take this as an individual situation. No two situations are alike. So
your experience may vary.
Yes. So we're going to have David Schauer. And David Schauer joined Hanson McLean roughly 18 years ago. Been with us for quite a long time. He rose to our chief financial officer in 2004.
Chief investment officer.
I'm sorry, chief investment officer. And if you subscribe to our newsletter, you'll get on a quarterly basis, we send out a market update that'll have a video with David Schauer. So you've seen David Schauer there.
So David is a chartered financial analyst, a certified financial planner, and he has a master's degree in financial analysis from USF.
That's right. So David, welcome to our program.
Good to be here. This could be tough to follow up on with the
okay, don't go. I know where you're going there.
All right.
I shouldn't have. Every once in a while, you step a little too far in the wrong direction.
You just hope your wife does not, none of her friends mention that there to you, Scott. But you didn't recommend the plastic surgery, so I think you did the right
thing. I was trying to be funny.
Talk through the financing of it, huh?
So anyway, tell us a little bit about your client situation. Kind of give us the background,
sure.
David, and then let us know what your recommendations and the outcome were.
Sure. This was actually not a client, but a person who had called in and had some questions. I think they were introduced to the firm maybe by the radio show or some of the other ways in which people come to us. But basically, this person had come to us. I'd never met him, and so I just had a phone appointment with him. And he had separated from service from a company about 4 or 5 years ago and had moved his 401k to an IRA. And had subsequently gone to work for another company and was now parting ways with that company and this is about October, November, and he was going to be not retiring, but leaving that company in January. He was about 54 at the time. January that year, he was going to be 55. He was going to be looking to go back to work in about a year or so. They were moving to another state, a relatively low cost of living state.
Okay.
And so he had had some challenges in the past, or they had had some challenges in the past with respect to credit and whatnot. So buying a house, even though it was a lower cost state, they needed some additional means. And so when we looked at kind of the dynamics of their portfolio, basically what they had was this IRA from his prior employer. And so kind of in looking at this and realizing that their income was going to drop, but they were comfortable with that because she already had a job back. It was kind of in the South. And really, they just wanted to have a home paid for. So what I suggested was they take the IRA, they move that back into the 401k of his existing employer. Now, granted, he was only going to be there another 2 or 3 months. He knew that. But what he didn't quite know is that because he was going to retire in January, IRS would look at it, but he was just parting. I'm sorry, go ahead.
He wasn't necessarily retiring. He was separating from service from that particular employer. So use the word retire. It doesn't actually require retire. I think I know where you're going with this, and I think it's great advice. He was just separated from service from that employer at the age of 55.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, and so they were going to have a dip in income for this that year that he was going to separate. He was going to take some time back there, get the house kind of settled that they were hoping to buy, and then look to go back to work the following year. So what I suggested is move his IRA back into his 401k, then separate from service. Now, even though he was 54, he was going to be 55 in that year in which he was separating. So I think his birthday was October, November the following year. He had just turned 54. But because he was separating in January, he was going to be 55 in the calendar year in which he separated. So then he was able to take a distribution without having any penalties applied, along with the proceeds from their home here, and they were able to buy a home outright where really they couldn't get any financing because, like I said, of some prior issues. And so this just fit perfectly. Plus, then if he did stumble in getting a job in the following year, they had access to the 401k money as kind of a fallback. That wasn't the plan, but as a fallback if something should come up without, once again, any penalties.
So it really
fit their situation perfectly. The timing fit well. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So David, for the listeners, if you're age 55 or older in the year in which you separate from service,
either retirement or moving on, just leaving,
there are no penalties to take money out of a 401k. There's taxes
of that employer's retirement plan of any kind.
Right. That employer's. So what David did for the listeners is they had this IRA. He said, move it to your company 401k plan when you separate
because
from
IRAs
service,
are locked to 59 and a half.
You're going to take that lock off it early. You're going to put it in the company's 401k, and then you're going to take distributions. You're going to pay taxes on it, but you're not going to pay 10% federal penalty, and certain states have, you know, the state of California has a 2.5% penalty of their own, which was a great idea because you took illiquid assets and made them liquid for this particular client, whether they needed it or not. It was a good idea. David, do you think
I know for a fact they went ahead and bought the house. It worked out well. They called me back afterwards and thanked me.
But they
worked exceedingly well.
So let me ask you a question.
And they weren't clients?
No, they had just, it was just the first time phone appointment that I had.
They needed help. And
yes.
And you were able to zero on it in, I think, probably relatively short period of time. I mean, because you knew the rules. Do you think the IRS is going to come back at some point in time and say, hey, you can't take these IRAs and push them back in 401ks and make them liquid like
some
that?
Some sort of source rule?
You know, they just changed a lot of those rules. I guess it's been a while now, but the early part of the 2000s to allow for, you know, all of these plans to kind of go back and forth and have, you know, reciprocity with one another. So it's hard to see why
you're right, because there used to be more source rules, and I'm trying to remember exactly what they were for, but you had to keep track of them, and they did away with those. So
that was good.
I think that was 2004. Was it 2004? Yeah, something like 2001, 2004, somewhere in there.
That was good advice. So you were able to help them get to their goals. And they may
that's
not
what,
have had
that's
it.
What you call finding a it's not really a loophole, but it's using the tax code to its maximum
right, for their benefit.
Yeah, to their benefit.
Because they may have pulled the money from the IRA in order to buy the house, in which case they would have had to pay penalties on it.
Exactly.
That was good advice, David.
Thank you, David.
It worked out well.
All that formal education, that CFA, CFP, that master's in financial analysis, it's finally paying off.
Yeah.
Good thing. A little bit here and there. All right. Well, good to join you guys.
Thanks, David.
Thanks,
you know what I found interesting about what David talked about? You're not going to get that advice from most advisors, and here's why. Most advisors get paid to manage money.
As do we.
Correct.
As do we. But you never put yourself in front of the client.
But my experience in the marketplace is that there's a lot of people that sell commission products that certainly have no incentive to tell someone to take the money.
That's correct.
There's advisors that know that if money leaves the firm, they're not going to be able to charge a fee on that. So they don't. There's a conflict of interest between you and the advisor on certain matters, and this is one of them.
Yes.
Would you not state that?
Yes, but the philosophy in our firm
is do the right thing, and everything else pays for itself.
It pretty much will take care of itself, right? If you're honest and transparent and ethical.
I remember years ago, Pat, I had a woman came in. She had recently divorced and went through some things. Anyway, I had her take money out of the account and pay off her house. Well, I forget the dollar amount. Had her pay off the mortgage. And because she wanted that anyway, and she was ecstatic. And she called me a couple weeks later and she said, hey, just want to let you know, when I talked to my accountant, he said he had never, in his entire career, had never heard of a financial advisor offering up the money that they managed to give back to pay off someone's mortgage.
It's terrible.
That's what I thought. That's what was the right thing to do. So,
yeah.
Anyway. So. Hey, couple things of note. We're just about out of time here. First of all, moneymatters.com, there's a lot of great resources on there. One is you can get a copy of my book. If you don't have my book yet, I encourage you to get a copy of my book. moneymatters.com/book. You go there, you'll get a code for 75% off. And we've got some other great things, making sure your portfolio is set up properly through our Money Matters stress test, to our on-demand webinars. I mean, there's tons of stuff there. So also, if you like the program or don't like the program, go to iTunes and rate us. Would you please? Rate us at iTunes. We'll see you next week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.